Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Doom wears body armor to conceal his own mangled form, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That was me beneath the armor. The Hulk. A normal guy one minute, a rage of emotions the next. Just like me when I thought about what I'd given up.
So you created each character as a way to deal with your one big regret.
Yeah, the girl that got away. Look, do yourself a favor, Brody. Don't wait, because all the money, all the women, even all the comic books in the world, they can't substitute for that one person.
I don't know, all the comics in the world?
Trust me, true believer. Well, good talking to you.
Keep up all the good work.
You keep reading them. I'll keep writing them.
Hey, Stan.
Yeah?
She really meant that much to you?
Brody, I'd give it all up. All of it. For just one more day with her. Take care.
Stan.
Hi. Hey, you know, I think he bought it.
Yeah? What kind of story did you give him?
Oh, it was the Vulture soliloquy, you know, from the Spider-Man anniversary issue. Love, be a vulture tonight.
Well, I can't thank you enough, man.
Oh, forget it. But, you know, I think you ought to get him some help. He seems to be really hung up on superhero sex organs. But you'll outgrow it. Okay.
Folks, gentlemen, just come on in because I blanked out. Everything. I don't know if you can hear me. I just blanked out. Captain? Captain Kirk.
Yeah, I'm in here.
Yeah, it sucks.
I'm back. And okay. let me just help out people here. I'll just say this, devoting a second to my other love. All right? Sports experts and pundits, if you rip Chad Johnson for patting his attorney in court, don't come back and tell me I have to wait on Aaron Hernandez. Gives the cops a smashed cell phone and erases his own security system. That doesn't seem fishy to you? Come on, man. Back to you.
Yeah, I don't know the full story on that one. That's the one with the guy that's accused of murder or something?
Yeah. A friend of his gets killed a mile away from his home. Okay. The police, of course, since it's one of his friends, has him as a person of interest. They subpoena his phone and get a subpoena to search his premises. Coincidentally, his lawyers turn over the phone and it's all smashed. The security system is wiped, and he so happened to have a full house cleaning about 10 minutes before the cops come in. Boy, that doesn't seem fishy. If you've ever seen any episode of Law and Order, you know, that's how hypocritical some in the media are. So folks listening to us, I promise you we will never be that hypocritical on this place. If you deserve to be ripped, you know gosh darn I will rip you.
All right. Listen, unfortunately, my systems went down, not completely because you can hear me, but I got booted out of our boards. That's why everything went off without a hitch until it was time to place our intro up there. So our apologies. Again, folks, believe it or not, this is the Comic Shop, the Grindhouse edition of Afternet Radio. The Comic Shop first at 6 p.m. and, of course, Afternet Radio at 7 p.m. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Okay, my boards, we're back up on the boards. At least I am. So, we're going to have to forget about the intro, gentlemen. Every once in a while, things just do not go the way they're supposed to go. Anyway, let's try to go through some topics for the hour. Number one, I'm going to lean on Daryl on this one. Man of Steel Part 2, and I don't mean Man of Steel, the film Part 2, but our discussion Part 2 briefly. Maybe I was a bit too quick in critiquing Man of Steel for its lack of connections to other DC heroes. Now, maybe I'm missing some things. After some websites, newspaper articles, now there's talk that there were some Easter eggs in The Man of Steel that do tie into other characters. Now, I'm aware of the LexCorp truck that was damaged, obliterated is a better word, obliterated in the fight between Zod and Clark Kent. But now they're saying that there was a Wayne Tech connection. Daryl, did you see anything of anything in the movie that made any connection to Wayne Tech?
Okay. All right. Let me, and this is for guys that want to staunchly say, oh, it's a bigger connection. Oh, it's a bigger connection. Okay, a LexCorp truck gets destroyed. Excuse me. That's still Superman, all right? That is still confined to the Superman universe, all right? All right, so they come with, oh, but you saw when they were fighting him and the salad they brought down, there's that Wayne Enterprise sticker on the side. You want to know when I saw that? I saw that on the second viewing. All right? I had to physically, on the second viewing, go ahead and pay close attention to that. All right. I see that. That's great. That's like 5 seconds. Here is the thing, DC nuts, that want to get at me for what I said last week. All right? With Avengers, they made it overt. If you look at all of the Easter eggs that they did to set up their universe, they made it overt. There was subtle nods to the geeks that all could follow, subtle nods to the nerds that they could all follow, subtle nods to the comic book fan that they could all follow. But they also did an overt thing for the people that don't read that don't know the connections offhand and say, oh my God, that's Nick Fury. He was in that movie too. Could this be connected? Oh, I recognize that. That's Captain America's shield. Oh, I don't know who that bad guy is at the end, but seeing all these people go crazy around me, he must be somebody. Let me ask him. That's what they failed to do here. They didn't do something in this film to get people wondering, what's the connection? How can we continue? Oh, my God. So what you're saying is you expect the mainstream fan to be eagle-eyed to spot that to get them hyped for a JLA film. After you, and it wasn't the fans bragging, Warner Brothers themselves was saying, oh, we are going to use this as a launching pad to set up our quote-unquote JLA / Avengers franchise. You guys said it. I will rip you guys if you guys didn't come out and say it. As a matter of fact, if you go back in our shows, when they promised this, I said, you guys better deliver. It can't be empty talk or I will rip you. Captain, do you recall me saying that?
Yes, yes.
Okay, did they deliver that? Is a Wayne's Enterprises satellite enough? No. I'll answer that one right cleanly. No. Cap, floor is yours, man.
Well, what we have to understand is that this is not a Ridley Scott Prometheus film where there's things layered on layers on layers that actually you can see, though they're layered. The casual viewer might miss them, but you actually can see in a Ridley Scott type of movie. This is Zack Snyder, Christopher Nolan, you know, and the other writer, you know. And I think what you have a lot here is people digging and wanting things, wanted to jump out more. When they had an opportunity for it to jump out more, it's not that difficult. It's not that difficult to make these things jump out and tie into other universes if they really wanted to do it. So, you know, I think they had an opportunity to do it that way, and their little innuendos, their little things that they threw up there, that's garbage, as far as I'm concerned. That's totally garbage. If you do it, just do it and be done. So what if people say you're a hack, you're a this, you're a that, whatever, man. Because to tell you the truth, in my opinion, this movie franchise, the Superman, it's not Iron Man. It's not Batman. You're still running behind. You're not even Spider-Man at this given point. You know, you're still running behind. So you might as well just pull the little hack and just give the people what they want. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, it is a bit disturbing. I do want to give further information, or I should say alleged information, because when you hear how these things are being laid out, you know, it does come from a place of people wanting these things. They want them to happen. So this is what I'm seeing, like what some folks are alleging are the Easter eggs. So let's just kind of go through them. Of course, as I mentioned, there was a truck that had LexCorp on it, but there were actually a number of trucks. There was a truck that they're saying that passed the Kent residence. There's a LexCorp building, and of course there was a truck that was damaged. So that's one thing. That's pretty obvious, but like Daryl said, that's within, I mean, that's really not an Easter egg, really, because, I mean, you know a Lex Luthor is going to show up in any iteration of a Superman franchise. That's like saying that there's never going to be a Joker in a Batman thing. So that's not really helping any. The Wayne Enterprises thing, they're saying, for a brief second, you can see one of Bruce Wayne's satellites during the final fight scene between Kal-El and General Zod, which isn't really a surprise considering Christopher Nolan's involvement in the films. That must have been real quick. I heard about this thing, but I didn't really see it. So I'm going to have to, I mean, you know, did you see that, Captain?
No, I didn't see it. And I watched the film
okay,
twice.
Let's see. Now get this. There's actually some kind of Supergirl connection they're putting out there now.
Oh, great. All right, let me hear this.
Okay.
Sorry.
So this is nerd hopes and dreams. This is from you can tell them how it's actually being how it's actually being phrased here. This is from a Yahoo article. It says, "Stay with us here." Already, you know, stay with us here. When Clark enters the Fortress of Solitude, he finds numerous pods that have dead bodies inside. However, in the background, you can clearly see that one of them is open. Now, before Man of Steel was released, DC Comics decided to unveil a comic that explained how the vessel made it down to Earth, and inside it stated that Kal-El's cousin, Kara Zor-El, also known as Supergirl, was on board. Could she be on Earth, too?
All right. Yeah, the reason that one doesn't work, all right, and again, this is you guys reaching, all right? How many people read comics? We did this with Dwayne McDuffie. How many people read comics? Did anybody catch that tie-in? No. All right, I'll tell you that right now. I can't even remember when that prequel was released. You're expecting the mainstream fan to remember that? You are nuts. Back to you, Alpha Nerd.
Yeah, it does. I have to agree with the captain on this as well. It seems like Warner Brothers is just fighting. It's just fighting what people really want. I don't get these people. Now, we also heard, which makes no sense at all, but I guess it makes sense in a way, because we said this on the Afro Nerd show. If you want to get fired real quick, be very good at your job. Be effective, I should say. Not necessarily good at your job, but be effective. If you try to improve, if you show improve, if you do, or if you meet expectations or exceed expectations, you will probably lose your job. In this case, Jeff Robinoff, who was the CEO of Warner Brothers Entertainment, who actually was one of the key figures to getting this whole DC comic book superhero thing, fast-tracking it. He said, we're going to do all this stuff. After we saw what happened with Marvel, after what he saw with Marvel, he was the main figure that said, hey, we got to get things moving. So he is to be applauded. And when I heard about him and his passion for getting these DC properties on the big screen, I said, okay, now we're ready to go. Guess what? They fired his ass. And they fired his ass after being rather successful. You could go down his resume, not just with Superman, or Man of Steel, I should say, but there's a number of high-profile projects that he was responsible for that made money, that brought Warner Brothers back into the fold, and for some reason, he's getting fired. He's got a golden parachute now. Don't feel so sorry for him. He's got a golden parachute. However, what happens now? I'm going to pose this to Daryl. What happens now with a guy who was the centerpiece, who had the passion to get these movies made, now they're getting rid of this guy?
Hey, you ain't no main example for this one, and I'll say it to the day I die, and DC fans will hate me, but they have no backup. Remember, I seem to recall this young writer-director who had a very successful thing on television, and he was given one of DC's premier franchises, and they pulled the plug on him, and then Marvel drove up to his house with a whole bunch of money saying, we got this thing called Avengers to direct, and we think you're perfect for it. Oh, yeah, the guy's name was Josh Whedon. You know, wait. I seem to recall this actor director who's always gotten a bad rap being offered JLA and then having it pulled off the table because fans were in an uproar, and he went on to just do one of the best movies of last year. Oh, yeah, Ben Affleck. Anytime Warner Brothers does a stupid move to somebody, they go someplace else and hit something big. All right? I can't explain it. It's like, I forget the name of that movie but it was a Jessica Alba flick where girls would sleep with this guy. He would never find his love, but the next one they find would be their true love. If you guys recall that one, I forget the name of the actor that was opposite Alba in it, but it was hilarious. That's what Warner Brothers is. You could have the greatest pitch in the world for a DC hero. They will nitpick it and shut it down. I'll call you crazy or even fire you, and you go on someplace else and you become great. And you become mildly successful. Then a related note, you know, Desmond is going to send in something to Warner Brothers for a Wonder Woman flick. He's going to get canned by there, but end up going to Marvel and do that night thrash and end up with a 3-picture deal. I'm just saying that if we look at it like that, that's how it's going to end up. Back to you, D-Bert.
I'm just going to mention one more thing, because I'm looking at, you know, when you go to do a cursory review of this whole Easter egg thing with Man of Steel, there's upwards anywhere from 4 to 15 Easter eggs now. Now, one of them has been. Now, listen. I'm not going on an expedition. I mean, okay. I guess it does. It is an Easter egg. I mean, you know. But they're really going too far with the analogy now, because now we have something that's being corroborated by David Goyer himself. David Goyer is the writer of the latest Man of Steel, and actually he's a writer for a lot of this stuff. Allegedly, the Justice League movie, which is being fast tracked, he's also supposed to be the writer on that one as well. Anyway, it says here, there's a Keep Calm and Call Batman poster hidden in the final fight. Let me repeat that. There's a Keep Calm and Call Batman poster hidden in the final fight. When Zod's tearing the building apart with his heat vision, there's a Be Calm and Call Batman sign on the wall there. just really small, says Snyder. Okay, yeah, Snyder confirms this.
Why is it
you
small?
Might,
why didn't they make it big?
You might,
oh, man.
Listen,
you're pissing me off
you
now,
might,
man. Go ahead.
You might even have to stop the movie to see it, but it's definitely in there. That's
yeah, I'm in the theater. I'm going to stop the movie to see that.
Exactly.
Why? Yeah, did we learn nothing for Iron Legend Warner Brothers? Did we learn nothing?
No.
You know, they had that Batman Superman sign big. I am Legend has done a better job to set up a bigger DC universe than the DC universe. And people wonder why I rip on DC. you know the clip you guys got to get from me now? Anytime we discuss this, there's a Homer Simpson clip where he's talking about how he needs Rage and Horror to survive. That's where I'm at right now. Stop. Listen, all this is DC diehards and stuff is you've heard the rip job that other fans have done on you because this movie failed to set up what Warner Brothers said it was going to set up, and now you're searching for anything to say. Oh, well, you guys didn't see it, but you see that coffee mug in that scene and with the bat insignia on it? The streak of lightning as they were fighting, that was the Flash. If you zoom into 1 million times the depth perception, you'll see them. Come on, guys. Just admit you guys could not give the payoff you promised on this.
Oh, Wayne
Industries satellite. Give me
good.
A break.
That was good, pal. That was good.
But listen, Iron Legend did a better job setting up a JLA movie or at least a Batman Superman movie than even Batman and Superman did. Are they nuts? What's wrong with you, Warner Brothers?
Back to you, well, you know, I don't even want to mention, I mean, I'm looking at this other thing. These guys.
I want to hear more.
I'm going to mention one more, then I'm going to go to a musical break.
Okay.
Folks, again, you listen to the Comic Shop. This is the Grindhouse edition of the weekend broadcast. Next up at 7 p.m., of course, we have Afro Radio, where we discuss things of more serious fare, I suspect, sometimes more serious. This is so crazy. This is Snyder again. Snyder with his visual effects supervisor. Again, this is something that we're probably going to have to look into if I cared now. I'm losing interest in this. In this chase, he says that there's a Utopia Casino sign. The Utopia Casino sign hints toward another Superman villain. Okay, Snyder says that his visual effects supervisor snuck this thing in here. It says in the comics, the owner of the Utopia Casino was Tony Gallo, an unscrupulous businessman from Nevada involved in first bringing Superman into contact with Kryptonite. As we all know, Snyder was keen to announce that there was none of the green glowing crystal to be seen in Man of Steel. But that doesn't mean it couldn't crop up next time around. Okay, there's a video interview, and it says perhaps Gallo might have something to do with it. So because there's a Utopia Casino in the movie, that is indicative of Tony Gallo, who brings in Kryptonite. I mean, you know what? That's pretty big, but that's really.
These guys are bad, man. They're bad. They're really bad, man.
I mean,
you can write in Kryptonite anytime. You don't need that to write in Kryptonite.
Hey, we don't even need Kryptonite. Him stepping on the ship got poisoned. I'm coughing up blood. What's wrong with me? The ship was kryptonite. Come on, again. This is backtracking. This is polishing up turds to make them look special. This is. You had a good movie. based on the fan reaction and the turnout here. But you did not do what your higher-ups promised. Your higher-ups promised a big link. All right? When I say big, I don't mean, oh, half the movie involves other characters from other universes. No. All right? You want to know what a big link is? You had the movie shot. All right? Instead of giving us that final scene with Clark Kent in the Daily Planet in an age where everybody has video that no one recognizes his face, but I digress on that. You know, instead of giving us that, you could have had a monitor and a gloved hand click a monitor. All right? Not even more than 10, 15 seconds. Click a monitor. And zoom in on the fight with Superman and Zod in the ruins of Metropolis. And have a cat that just goes, this bears further watching. And cut out. And people will be wondering, who is the gloved hand? That was a giant computer. Oh, my God. Could that have been Batman? Oh, my God. Could that have been Lex Luthor? Oh, my God. And then you would have had, that would have did the job. No foresight. No thinking. Not knowing how to... And that's the messed up thing. It's Warner Brothers. It is the kings of the comic industry. When you look at the whole history of comic books, right? You would think they would know how to set up another storyline in a current one. You would think they would know how to do that. But no, they did it. Listen, just say... We wanted to. Now you're going to go back and you're going to provide all of these extras with like little microscopic glasses and stuff. And oh, see that. It was all over the place. Do we look like morons to you?
Let's go to a quick groove. Let's turn things around a little bit. And when you talk about a microscopic glass, Daryl, you are being absolutely correct because. One of the other Easter eggs that I heard about before, there's a part where Superman is flying up a building, and it passes a sign that says Blaze Comics. And Blaze Comics is a direct reference to Booster Gold. But they actually have a picture of where you can see it. If our audience, you can simply just put in Blaze Comics, Man of Steel, you'll see it. But what is that? You have to be a comicologist to make that connection. It's just goofy.
Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy.
And already, in the second, I want Man of Steel to be successful. It appears that it will be. I think China is opening up now to Man of Steel, so more countries are being added on to this thing. But Monsters University has already surpassed this for the second week. Now, Iron Man was number one for what, 3 weeks going?
Three weeks.
Okay, he could hold on past a week. So it is what it is. Let's go to a quick nerdcore groove, folks. We got Afternoon Radio coming up at 7 p.m. More comic book, sci-fi, fantasy talk. This is Cybernetic Circuits by Optimus Rhyme. Giving you some nerdcore. We'll be right back.
Is on my payroll. I spend 20 G's on this vocab upgrade. Phylogenetical cybernetic tongue muscles are good for the flow and great for other things. Now I mean, human chips each at 50 gigs. Optimus, impossibly efficient, but 1%. Thermodynamics designed by devious engineers. Every last one excels for guilt for stealing gears. Elaborate systems are probing space for them shows. Titanium lawyers by Mother Nature's move. Hold purple, hurdle in the head, and I'll pass bug killer. I founded in that patch, it made me iller. Pupils constrictive, you can see monocle irises. I hired an analysis to see what my virus is. What? It's not what I expected. Infected by the whacker called conspiracy, inhibitory, infected.
Ain't nothing left but these cybernetic circuits to work with. I burst in binary code without rehearsing. I'm bursting. Permanent collisions for your operating system. You want me to stop? But what's the difference? Resistance is useless within this. Auto beat monopoly and you're another victim. We break in, spitting more than Jeff Slim. Taking everything hostage, no ransom. I'm logged on from net to dot.
gigabytes.
I eat databases, networks, and websites.
I got vicious viruses that devour these satellites.
Encryption, deciphering all that you read and write.
Ignite with 5 million horses under the hood.
Conscious artificial intelligence up to no good.
Maybe delivering doses as both as misunderstood.
It's the optimist, you want stuff to steal if you could.
I got 5 hard drives with 89 gigabytes.
I eat databases, networks, and websites.
I got these vicious viruses that devour these satellites.
Encryption, deciphering all that you read and write.
Ignite with 5 million horses under the hood.
Conscious artificial intelligence up to no good.
Maybe delivering doses as both as misunderstood.
It's the optimist,
you want this stuff to steal if you could.
Listen, folks, we try to give you the best of the alternative. Of course, for Afternoon Radio coming up at 7 p.m., we give you the urban alternative. And this is a type of urban alternative show as well. We're talking about black geekdom, so to speak, black nerddom, hence Afro nerd. So, yes, we do talk about comic books, sci-fi, fantasy. And that was, of course, the best of nerdcore music, a genre unto itself. Not everything's about gangsta and twerking. Believe it or not, it's not always about twerking and being gangsta. That was Cybernetic Circuits by Optimus Rhyme. Definitely Google nerdcore. A lot of artists that are doing that kind of hip-hop music. Folks, the call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Turning things around a little bit, I guess the best living embodiment of LexCorp, Daryl, is probably Microsoft. The reason why I say that is that... Microsoft did a turnaround earlier this week,
That's right.
I suspect that they would, because there was literally a revolt online. Literally a revolt. Now, I must say, I did place a pre-order for both systems, both platforms, but I was very much thinking about retracting the Xbox One from my pre-order list because of all these things. All these things that were very Orwellian and disturbing that had the – it was a revolt. First of all, at one point, the PS4 platform was outpacing in sales or outpacing in pre-orders 4-1 based on all these restrictions that Microsoft was seeking to impose on their customer base. It was ridiculous what they were talking about. Just off the cuff – off the cuff, again, folks, we're talking about the Xbox One, which is the next generation after Xbox 360. And I hate the name, first of all. We go from 360 to Xbox One. Come on. 720, man.
There you go.
720. Stop fighting. Stop fighting. It's the same thing with Warner Brothers. Stop fighting what's natural. You know what I mean? What's natural is you have a big reference to something. What's natural is Xbox 720, not Xbox One. All right. Besides that, but the main thing was they were looking, and I believe we mentioned this before in the last previous broadcast. They were looking, it's ingenious, but it's very much a Lex Luthor move. They were trying to really impede the used games market, almost decimated. What they were planning to do, from my understanding, was if a person buys a video game from Microsoft, you figure, okay, I'm buying it from them, it's mine, I can do whatever I want to do with it. Not the case. What they were planning to do was have a code on that game. So when you resell it, they become aware of it, and they get a piece of the second and third and fourth sale of that machine. It's like if I have a car and I sell it to somebody and then that person sells that car again, I get a piece of their sale after selling it the first time. So they would try to get that going. Then they also wanted to have it where because everything's about the internet now, they wanted their internet presence, the console's internet function, to be on all the time. You couldn't cut the damn thing off. There was some kind of authentication process related to you having to have to always be connected to that server. And also I heard that there was some kind of infrared eye on this thing that when the game is on, it could read your heartbeat, see how if you were looking left to right, if you were standing up or sitting down. And they were looking at you, literally. That's too much. That's Skynet. It's Skynet, for Christ's sake. Darren, what do you... Now they got rid of all that because the sales were plummeting. So what are your thoughts on this? They're reverse
on it. This just did. Arnold Schwarzenegger is knocking at my front door, and I don't think he looks happy. Let's put it this way. There comes a point where innovation just crushes, either crushes you, crushes your wallet, or both. All right? In the race to be, oh, we're going to give you the total home experience. Oh, people have got to understand that there's a point where you get to go too far. I think Microsoft has touched that point. It hasn't even touched that point. They saw the line where too far was. They started doing a Fandango / Riva Dance all over the line. And then just gone, yeah, but you still pay us the money for it. That's what I took these innovations from Microsoft to be. I mean, come on, a scanner to scan you as you play or look at something through the system. Really? Hey, I don't need to go to the doctor anymore. I got an Xbox One. You know, though, man worries, I don't have cancer. The radiation emanating from the Xbox One is checking me out. I'm okay. You know, this is part of the reason I got out of majorly collecting video games and going after every system and thing, because there's a point where it gets to be too much. All right? Your fan base is generally one that's nostalgic. They love the cutting-edge games, but they want to play their old games at the same time. When they started charging $30 and up to play the old games to an online stuff where your stats and stuff majorly doesn't get saved, you know, I was like, okay, you're trying to slay the golden goose. Here, with all, there comes a point, and you know what, Sony, I'm not going to distract from you. I hope you got the security bugs worked out, all right? Third company, look in the mirror. And just admit your soulless, money-grabbing operations. Just admit it. Admit it, all right? Because, you know, video gamers are sheep. They'll keep on buying it. And if you want further proof of that, remind me again the lines for the Galaxy 4S and the iPhone 5 and how are either one of those radically different than the predecessors? But still, there was big lines for it. Remind me the lines any time a new pair of Jordans come out. The American consumer, the worldwide consumer, we're idiots. We'll go and buy it. But just admit, you guys are greedy, heartless thugs. Captain, floor is yours.
Well, hold on. Actually, we have a caller, Daryl. Let's open up the lines. Let's see what our audience has to say about this topic. Caller, welcome to the comic shop. This is the Grindhouse, 703. What's up? Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey, everybody. This is Bice for Life, George from D.C. Hey, how's it going? Just want to chime in on the subject and maybe actually a comic book, if you allow me. But
I think
the timing couldn't have been worse with all the NSA things coming out about the government spying on you and this coming out. I think there's some linkage between the two. It's funny that we guys said that because I bought a video game the other day. And people already lined up doing pre-orders for PlayStation 4. So that's not going to go away because people are always going to want the latest this to have something you don't want to have. I, for one, just hold back and wait for the bugs to be ironed out. You know, I'm not going to pre-order a gaming system. I will eventually get it. It might be a year later or a year and a half later, but I'm just not, that's just not me. But, you know, we're talking about a young gamer-driven generation that's, they want to be the first.
And, you know, he brings up something. It reminds me of a Futurama episode, and welcome back, Futurama. Good luck in your final season. You know, they had something called the iPhone, which was where their version of Apple put a microchip in your brain, where literally your thing is the computer, your head becomes the computer. I can see us going that way. The way this is going, I can see that happening. Oh, man, I got my new iPhone. I got my new iBox. I got my new iStation. I can see it happening. And there'll be morons to go in and do it without checking if there's any bugs or glitches.
Well, you know something, George really brings up something very important. It's almost an Afro-Nerd Radio discussion. But that was something that really did go through my mind that, you know, with the NSA and folks having issues with data mining, this is a form of data mining. And, you know, it's problematic. And you also think of the fact that there's such angst with some factions of the American public toward government data mining. No one talks about corporate data mining, which is what this is. Everyone is doing a pathological examination on you. Everybody. Not whether it's the corporations, whether it's the government, or whether it's your neighbor. Your neighbor is who knows who's looking at you. This is an Orwellian nightmare on steroids. It just is. It's very frightening. Now, I have to admit, I did pre-order these two games. Now, I never pre-order anything. And I'm usually like George. I will wait it out, but I'm not used to being able to get anything on time. Anytime I picked up any of these platforms, the last platforms, I got them a year later. So this is new for me. I guess kind of a self-experiment to see, let's see if I really get these things. But normally, I'm accustomed to waiting after eBay sells these things for $2,000 and $3,000, which is going to happen, because the pre-order sales for both platforms, there were people buying multiple platforms. They were buying, you know, 6, 7, 8 PS4s, 5 Xbox One. That's going on. So we'll see how it works out. We have another call, but I wanted to complete with George. George, you also had another question.
I don't know if you guys are transitioning to comics this week. Quick thing.
We're all over the place.
I saw World War Z. I'll defer to your guys' conversation. Let's just say it strayed too much from the source material. I want you guys' take on the new Avengers with Black Panther and Namor with Shuri and how she's taking Wakanda to war with Atlantis. I think that's that might be a very good arc.
Well,
okay. Hold on, Dal.
You got it.
This. Yeah. First of all, I'm a big fan of this book. Is Hickman writing this book, Daryl?
What?
Is Hickman writing this book?
Yep.
I like the art. I like Black Panther's role in this. Listen, this is what frustrates me about the book, and it's not about the book being bad or anything, is that it is we're finally after what? Almost 50 years of the Black Panther's existence. Well, I shouldn't say that because you had the two runs. You had Hudlin's run and you had Priest's run. But even then, we're going on 10 to 15 years since that. We're starting to get into Wakanda mythology more. It's even better. He's king of the dead. He has all these past Panther powers. He can access all these other Panther, all the other Panther knowledge. What does that mean? You know, I want to know what that means. The fact that we're accustomed to seeing Asgard and Mount Olympus. Now we have really a black version of that. We're seeing that now for the first time. there was always this reference to this mysticism with the Panther, and he would reference it, but we never actually saw it materialize. So I like how it's going. I'm not so sure of the fight between Wakanda and Atlantis, how that's going to go down, but you got political intrigue, you got monarchs going at it. It's a lot to unpack on that. It's so good, like Supreme Power was good. You know, listen, let's hope it lasts. The only thing I have a problem with is that we see no Storm. We had a intact black power couple, a real power couple, and now, and Daryl talked about that before. They just were just dismissive of it. They were just dismissive of that imagery. But now you have his sister. His sister's there as the real titular head of the country, and to see a strong black woman. I mean, you know, it's a lot of things going on there. Will we see it on a silver screen is one thing, but will we even see this last enough for it to have an impact? But I like where it's going. Love the book.
I give Hickman credit for picking up on one of the things from that stupid Avengers versus X-Men storyline that I thought they could blossom and thing. Just think about it this way. Namor gets the Phoenix power, and one of the first things he does is try to wipe Wakanda off the face of the planet. Right? Black Panther certainly didn't forget that, but you thought that Shuri would forget it? You thought any of those Wakandan people would forget that? Heck no, because they don't see the Phoenix power wiping out that. They see Namor. And what's Namor? He's the king of Atlantis. So guess what? The king of Atlantis tried to wipe out my city. Guess what my move's gonna be? I know T'Challa. He's a colleague of yours, but he just tried to kill us. So payback is a female dog. And let's get this started. But here it is. With Hickman in control, I'm fairly confident that he's going to approach this in an interesting manner.
T'Challa is like an intellectual equal of Reed Richards, and that's
exactly.
Something I've always they've always downplayed Black Panther's intelligence. They've always tried to equate it with mysticism. I know I basically look at T'Challa as almost sort of like a Doctor Doom with more powers and more history behind him. Not only he's super intelligent, has a country, but he's also a sorcerer to some extent. I hope this is fleshed out more. And I'll pay him. That's great show.
Great topic. And I will say this. For everybody who feels like, you know, Black Panther didn't get his intellectual due, or can't understand how he is not on the par with other heroes, pick up McDuffie's Fantastic Four run, the new Fantastic Four, where him and Storm join the Human Torch and Thing as Fantastic Four, while Reed Richards and Sue Richards are trying to work out the problems with their marriage after Civil War. All right, just pick that up and see how seamlessly he fits into the role as Patriarch and how seamlessly he does everything Reed Richards kind of does. Not with the super intelligence, but with his meticulous planning. All right, Wakanda's got defenses for the Silver Surfer. Who knew? You know what? We knew. Because if they had plans for everything else, it would make sense that Wakanda, one of the most technological countries in the Marvel Universe, would have a Galactus/Silver Surfer plan. It would make perfect sense. But this is something guys that don't know this or guys that can't infer on this, they don't even bother to think about. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I want the cast to weigh in on this. I'm not sure if he's read this book, but I guess, you know, it's easy to figure out the premise of it and the larger issues of it. George is right. To finally see, like, this intellectual equality. Now, you know, some folks may be listening that may not be familiar with the comic book world. Now, listen, I think it's slowly starting to seep in, obviously. almost to our chagrin. There's a psychological component, Daryl, that you and I have to deal with, and you and I go back and forth with this thing, with other folks getting
into
our world.
We have to slow it down.
No, not just that. I'm talking about just the fact that we're seeing people who want to know more about this nerd world, where years ago they didn't. Everybody is comfortable in describing themselves as a geek or nerd about something. You know, now you're not just a dumb jock anymore. If you're a jock that can spit out stats, now all of a sudden you're a sports geek. So all these things that, you know, the cultural component is changing a little bit, and I find myself at times getting a little bit frustrated that, well, why is T.I. looking like I said this before on the last show, why is T.I. the rapper looking like some kind of a T.I. IT guy, excuse me, is the acronym backwards. Why is T.I. looking like an IT all of a sudden? You know, it's cool. So I want our listening audience to understand that you may want to start getting into the stuff, because the implications are far deeper than you could ever imagine as far as imagery. These intellectual properties that may at one point might appear to be goofy cartoons, goofy comic books, are now multi-billion-dollar franchises. And you want to see, on occasion, you would want to see a person of color in the mix respected. And when I saw this Hickman story arc of the New Avengers, you're seeing a lot of stuff going on. The pacing of it is great, Dow. The part where you know, you get the personalities of these monarchs. I mean, again, we're talking about the comic book equivalent of the Illuminati. They call themselves the Illuminati. These major heroes that are really above just saving somebody from a building. They're working on behind the scenes machinations that can affect future storylines, and you see how that's going on. And the thing that with the pacing, there's a part, like little subtleties, the part where Hank Pym, the X-Men's Beast, where he confesses to, you know, he's just talking, says, you know, I really like hanging with you guys. You know, so this has been the best time I've had, because he's around intellectual colleagues. And I get that, because that's something that the Beast would say. So I just love the book. I'm looking at little nuances, the pacing. It's very, even visually, very much a movie.
Well,
but when you see it as a movie, I doubt it, but it looks like a movie.
Yeah, if you look how Hickman has done it, right, and he's based this Avengers book very much on his Manhattan Project book over at Image. But this is his high concept, you know, intelligence, make you think book. The other Avengers book he's doing, that's the action junkie, you know, we're fighting every issue type book. You know, the Mighty Avengers that's coming out with Al Ewing that Hickman's consulting with him about, that's going to be the street level book. You know, they are attacking the Avengers universe in several different parts. So there's something for every type of action fan that's going to be there. Is it going to be overkill? I don't know, but I'm liking what I'm seeing so far.
One more thing. I've played this as an intro before, and just to show you how this stuff is seeping in, how deep it's getting, Daryl. I don't know if you picked this up. A recent NCIS episode, a conversation between actually Chris O'Donnell, who was Robin in the last Batman films before the Nolan verse, and LL Cool J. Listen to this.
You're hungry.
I know hypoglycemic induced hostility when I see it.
Just thinking.
About what?
You want to know what I was thinking?
About eating?
I was thinking about Wakanda.
Was that a camp in Wisconsin?
Seeing Abdul-Habaz's picture reminded me of Mo and Jada, the time I spent in Chad and Sudan. Started thinking about Wakanda.
Where is Wakanda?
It's nowhere. It's a fictional African country. The most technically advanced society in the Marvel Universe. and the riches.
Hold on a second. In a comic book? You just geeked out on me in a real moment?
Hey, man, when I was a kid, comic books were the only thing that made sense. It was simple. Good guys versus bad guys. For me, it was all about T'Challa, the Black Panther.
Of course.
Not just because he was a brother who was richer than Tony Stark. T'Challa was a leader. He was a president. He was a superhero. All at the same time. It was all about justice. When I left Brooklyn, the only thing I wanted to see was the motherland. And to witness that world up close. But instead of finding Wakanda, I found poverty, starvation, child soldiers, death squads.
Walt's bread and butter.
Thought I could save more. I really thought I could help Jada.
That whole motherland thing's overrated.
I'm telling you, folks, they're sneaking this stuff in now. On an NCIS show. Captain, your thoughts? We got about 3 minutes before we go to Afro-Nerd Radio next door.
Uh-oh. Cap?
He's there.
Well, hopefully with a little time, a little more effort, a little more of the mimetic virus growing through society, we can get a movie or a TV series along the lines such as this. It'd be very interesting to see. Only time will tell, but maybe in about, I would say, anywhere between 3 to 5 years, something like this can happen, which is very quick. So let's keep our heads up, and hopefully this will take place.
I'm putting my vote in. LL Cool J as Moses Magnum for Avengers 3. Bam!
Now I'm going to say something quickly. We've got about 2 minutes. That, you know, there's a history of really trying to downplay Black intelligence, even in comic books. You know, I think I might have referenced this in a previous show. There was a sci-fi comic book story in the 50s where there was an astronaut. You didn't see his face, and the big reveal was that he was a Black astronaut in the 50s, and the book was banned. The book was banned because you did not want to have any kind of reference to a Black man being an astronaut. That was controversial in the 50s, and that was in a comic book. So when we talk about these silly comic book stuff, it's a lot more serious than you could ever imagine. They did not, in 1950, whatever it was, the mid-50s, they did not want a depiction of a Black man as an astronaut. That was controversial. Can you imagine that? Then, of course, you have Barack Obama. God bless America. All right, folks, let's go to Afro Nerd Radio. Daryl, as always, it's been a pleasure. More serious fare coming up. Let's get to it.
Next week, World War Z.
Spock with a beard?
I think not. Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical.
Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind.
I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously you have lost it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in the cosmos, where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening once again, folks. This is the second half. This is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio, folks. We have a lot to get into, of course, giving you the best of edutainment, urban alternative music. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Quite a few topics to discuss on our plate. Of course, the big meal, someone is probably known for cooking, Paula Deen. She's at it. Racial Tricknology. We'll talk about it. We'll unpack on it. We have a lot of stuff beyond Ms. Deen. But it is what it is. You shouldn't be shocked that a older Southern woman might have some racial angst toward people of color. Not really shocked. All right, folks. As you know what we do. We give you the best of urban alternative music, funk, black rock, afro-punk. Everything that conventional radio refuses to play, we will play it. This is Omar, UK's Omar, pretty much a staple in the UK. Stylin', Omar and Angie Stone. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
I can see that you're cool, got something I want to be down with anything you're selling now, now. You give me palpitation, yeah, yeah. Whoa, whoa, make your move, stop to prove, show me what you got. I can see you're ready when you're on the spot, like now, now. You give me palpitation, no, 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 no. Around me, baby, wow, wow. You give me palpitations. Boom, boom, we can be anything that our hearts desire.
You're not ready. You're not. I'm going to play it anyway. Again, Omar Stylin from the UK. And, of course, this is After Earth featuring Captain Kirk, the Grindhouse edition of the show, the second part, giving you a double entendre, double deal. Captain, you're needed on the bridge post-haste. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now everybody put on your boxing gloves, because the audience loves when we get racial. And we're going to get a little racial, just a little bit, you know. You love when we go there. All right, Sir Aphrodite, let's start it up. Let's go.
That is a truism, isn't it, Captain? You know, if
yes,
we
sir.
Get into geek speak like the last show, of course, folks, and, of course, the indefatigable Daryl B. stopped by, as always, every Saturday at 6 p.m. to discuss all things comic books, sci-fi, fantasy. We do. People probably, why do you do that? Why do you do this? Because that's what we're about. You know, Captain, I met a young man in our local comic book shop at Superhero Comics in Floral Park, New York. And it's great speaking to him. And, you know, great diction, Captain. I'm going to go there. You know, when I speak to other men of color, other women of color, at these nerd centers where allegedly we are invisible, it's refreshing to come across someone who kind of gets it, the entire thing. Like, I could talk to this guy, and I mentioned, like, little references, even about Negro shenanigans off the cuff. You know, the things that are happening in lower-tier cultures. I didn't even want to really talk about this, Captain. A young man in D.C. was shot, allegedly, at a barbecue over a piece of chicken, possibly.
Whoa.
I mean, that's a Dave Chappelle skit. But it's reality. So when I kind of made a passing reference to what the show was about, he picked up on it right away. Now, if I spoke to Jaquan or Lakeisha about this, I might as well have been speaking Mandarin. And that is the reality of being black. It's not just one thing. Many different, a myriad of colors. Now, I'm not talking about just skin tone, obviously, but I'm talking about just how we think, how we operate. So, when we talk about other things, you might not get the same amount of listenership. When you talk about the racial stuff, we're glued. Glued to the radio. Glued to the computer screen. So, let's give the people what they want. I'm almost tired of this. Anyway, the deal this week, Paula Deen, fired from TV, Food Network, cable television, somewhat of a mogul, a mini mogul. She's had a long stint with the Food Network, and from my understanding, there were employees or former employees under her purview that are putting out, or I should say, levied allegations of racism and sexism between herself and her brother. Now, she's a middle-aged Georgian from the South that has made reference to having plantation lineage. It's not an excuse. Certainly not an excuse. But I'm just not shocked anymore. And I think, and I've said this before, Captain, we're losing ground on some of this stuff, somewhat, because of the minstrelsy that has allowed the N-word to really proliferate. She's accused of having used the N-word on really as language. I mean, during the deposition, again, she's being sued during the deposition, or for those who are unknown with legalese, it's an examination before trial, an EBT. Before trial, they get into the meat and potatoes of what's being alleged, getting your side of the story. So when asked, this is the funny part, have you ever used the N-word? Well, of course, Captain. Well, of course. Whoa. She didn't even try to smooth it out a little bit. She could have smoothed it out. Now, the part that makes it interesting, Captain, is she makes reference to having used the N-word when she was a bank worker. She worked in a bank, and a black man was there to rob it, according to her story, and that man put a gun to her temple. Now, if she had said, I don't approve of it, but I had a moment where I had a flash of anger because of this criminal that put a gun to my head, she might have been able to couch that. So let me tell you, Captain, this is why I'm a contrarian. This is why this show makes people feel uncomfortable. I spoke last week of a local story. I don't think these gentlemen, I'm saying in quotes, these gentlemen have been caught, but in the Astoria, Queens section of NYC. Allegedly, have young 20-somethings that are just going up to hardworking men specifically. I think they might be men of color, men coming from work on subways, on buses. They have iPhones in their hands. They're not really paying attention. They're not hyper-vigilant like we say they should be. But it happens. They're not hyper-vigilant. These young men are pummeling them without provocation for their money and for their cell phones, for their smartphones. If I get hit in the face, Captain, like that, I don't know if I would say to the police, that gentleman used some colorful language. Doesn't excuse what she did, because she went somewhere else. She went way beyond that. But the initial highlight of her having a gun put to her temple in a robbery does change things for me for that specific incident. Where she went into a whole deal is where it becomes problematic. I want to go to a quick clip. Now, this isn't really a news clip, actually. I didn't even want to go there. We play news clips all the time. I want to give you some insight as to how this woman thinks. You have calls too. We'll answer the calls as well. This was I guess last year sometime, maybe in New York. She was just being interviewed, and she was being interviewed about her life. And you can tell how rough around the edges this person is. And again, she's lower tier herself. That's the key component.
White trash.
Yes. That PWT.
Call it what it is, Afro Nerd. Call it what it is. Let's go.
That's the key component. Now, I'm all about labeling people. You have to be identified, tagged, and put on a shelf somewhere so I know how to deal with you. Okay? Some folks have this delusion that we're all the same and you can't judge. Okay. Try that philosophy. Living in the tri-state. Try that philosophy living in the tri-state downstate, Washington, D.C., Virginia, and Maryland. Try it down there. Okay, see what happens if you do not judge or have discernment. So, this is an interview courtesy of the Huffington Post with Paula Deen about a year ago, just riffing. This is what happens when the lower-tier white person, because we know what the lower-tier black person does when he riffs. She riffs about her life and her history, and it sounds crazy as all get out. So, without further ado, Paula Deen, hold on.
Great-grandfather was so devastated. The war was over. He had lost his son. He had lost the war. And he didn't know how to deal with life. With no one to help operate his plantation. you know, there was 30-something people on his books. And the next year's census, I go to find, and there's like zero. Between the death of his son and losing all the workers, he went out, I'm sure, into the barn, and he shot himself because he couldn't deal with those kind of changes. And they were terrific changes.
Right.
I feel like the South is almost less prejudiced because black folks played such an integral part in our lives. They were like our family. You know, it will take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It will take a long, long time to completely be gone, if it'll ever be gone. Who knows?
Right.
I think we're all prejudiced against one something or another, and I think black people feel the same prejudice, you know, that that white people feel. But I have a young man in my life, and his name is Hollis Johnson, and he's black
Hollis
as that
is
board.
Here, isn't he here? Is this Hollis?
Stand up,
Robert?
Hollis.
Hollis here.
Come
hi,
out
Hollis.
Here, Hollis. We can't see you standing against that dark board.
Welcome to New York City. All right.
Welcome to the South.
Hi, Hollis.
But you know, I tell people, this is my son by another father.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this young man. I would travel to hell with him, and I know I can trust him with my life, and color ain't got nothing to do with it. It's all about what's in here.
Hollis, thank you.
Butter, butter, butter. Give me more butter, butter, butter.
So she brought out Captain. Steven from Django. She brought out Steven from Django.
Listen, did you hear everything that was going on there, Captain?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure, boss. For sure, boss.
Listen, she says, first of all, I'm supposed to have sympathy because of some great-grandfather that shot himself in the head because he knew that the slaves were no longer slaves. It was the end of the Civil War. The Emancipation Proclamation had gone through, and I'm supposed to feel sympathy for some racist that finally took out the inevitable. It's like when Hitler knew his time was up, he was burnt to a crisp with Eva Braun, his old lady, in some bunker in Germany. I'm not going to have sympathy for that. No way. I'm with my Jewish brethren on that one. You got to go. So this guy was a lower tier Hitler, lower tier level, I should say, and lower tier. And then she used the term the workers. They weren't workers. They were slaves. The workers. Workers get paid. And then they're like family. Oh, yeah, they're like family because you're screwing them like family. Many of them are probably cousins. Come on now. I'm pretty sure, Captain, that with our surnames, we have white relatives. Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. That is the black experience, and she's sugarcoating it. And it's very casual. And then she says, come on out here. He does it black as a chalkboard. We can't even see him. We can't even see him. Come on now. Please. Get your fat, buttery ass off the stage. Now, I will say that, but I want the minstrel to go along with you. I'm like, now I'm thinking of Django, Captain. Django has a lot of stuff in there. You see how Django took care of the minstrel as well as the white racist. Both two symbols have to go. I'll take your ass out, or you could take the bullet on your own. Your choice. We have a call. Let's go to the call, and let's see what they have to say. 312, welcome to After the Radio.
Hi.
Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Kim Success. I am in Chicago, but I'm originally from Louisiana, so I understand the South. which is different from the North. The ideas and stuff are different. They still have plantations in Louisiana and throughout the South and Georgia. Most of the chefs in Louisiana and throughout the South still live on plantations and run their restaurants out of plantations. And they have plantation weddings, because I heard her say that, and even Black people have plantation weddings. So the South has a totally different mentality. And it's like this. It's like, okay, you're my brother in the North. When I come visit you, yeah, I'm going to act all hard and stuff. But when I'm in the South, I'm acting like just like Hollis. Come on, Hollis, come let us see you. Who talks to another adult like that? But that's how they are in Louisiana. I'm saying Louisiana because that's where I'm from, but that's how it is in Georgia, you know, Alabama, Mississippi, on throughout the way. So, no, she didn't say anything wrong with anything she said. Mostly that's probably Northerners that are offended, but Black people hear it day in and day out in the South.
Well, Captain, what do you have to say about that? I don't know what to say. It's crazy.
I mean, I'm from Louisiana, so I know how people are. My husband lives in Chicago. When he came to visit, he was like, he's not going to live down there. I have to come up here to Chicago. I mean, you know, it's just a different mentality. And just like she said, white people will never get over it because now they don't have any quote-unquote workers, and they still try to treat people like workers. And like I said, most of the – I'm thinking of pastors. I don't know if y'all know Jesse Duplantis. Most of these high-profile white people currently live in plantations and also live in neighborhoods that have – because my son went to a school, our local elementary school, or where I lived, the street names are based on Confederate wars. And I mean, it's just that's just the way that they live. So you can't expect them to give it up because that's how they live. If they weren't living like that, like if they were in the North and you're talking about plantation stuff, you'd be looking, what are you talking about? But in the South, that's what you do. When you go to Louisiana and Greenwood and those are the tours you go on. You go sightseeing to New York. You go sightseeing to the houses, the slave houses, the master houses, the field. You see all that in Louisiana. My mother lives on a street that still has the 100, 200-year-old oaks where people used to get lynched. So that is still prevalent in the South. It's not like that in the North, but in the South, that's the way people live. They may act like they don't, but they know that's the way they live. That's why she was able to do her disposition and nobody said anything.
Captain, what are your thoughts on what she's saying, what Kim is talking about?
Well,
just in general, this whole issue.
Well, here's the reality. Traditionally, the South has always been behind the North from an intellectual standpoint. And that's the reality of it, you know? And also, when we go West, but that's a whole other thing with California because they were the last ones to find out with the freedom and everything else. But that's a whole other thing. But this is America. This is not North, just North or South. This is America. So that being given, everyone in the South has to mature and catch up. And that's the reality of it, whether you're white or whether you're Black. And as far as from my standpoint, yeah, she gave a deposition and everything, and that brought out the truth and the reality of her mindset. But just because she lives in the South, that does not allow her and give her a pass to have the racist mindset because she was brought up a certain way. She's talking about plantation. She's talking about 1861, 1865. This is 2013.
But she probably still lives in her grandfather's plantation house. That's what I'm saying.
That's okay. That's all right. But
she has to get a new mind, but the location is still the same.
That's definitely true. Historically, from a historical standpoint, that's definitely correct. And that's why they had to let her go, because that little small network couldn't deal with all the backlash that may come from behind that. That's the reality of it in this modern-day era. Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd.
Yeah, let me say a couple of things just to kind of clear things up a little bit. Well, first of all, many Black American folk do have Southern roots. That's just the reality. I have Southern roots. I have Southern and Midwestern roots, actually. The Oracle, who was on last week, is from Kansas. And my mother, who I always throw out Shenandoah to her, the term Shenandoah,
She is from Virginia. And
so
my
son went to. He went to Shenandoah Elementary School, and they teach what all those names mean. They teach that to the children to make sure that they don't forget.
Exactly. And I also have the pleasure of having attended a Southern Black University, Hampton University, which is also in Virginia. So I would go to visit my relatives, my grandmother, and I'm very familiar with the difference between Southern and Northern culture. But at the same time, to be fair, in the South was where you would find educated Black folk. You do have many of these colleges that have for more than a century and beyond, were responsible for educating Black folk. And that was from the South. So, you know, you have Southern gentility. You have a Southern educational ethic there. It goes by discernment and who is who, and you have ignorance all about, even to this day. But at the same time, you know, this woman is 66 years old, which really in today's world is really not that old. But she's old enough, I guess, to still have some of these beliefs. But I have cousins and other relatives that will tell you that there's other aspects of the South that are very progressive, where you see – it's not uncommon to see Black women and white women in a hair salon together. You see that sometimes. You see white neighbors, especially in my grandmother's town, where they will come over. Someone passes on. They're over in your house giving you food, giving you Southern cuisine. You know, you have white Southerners that are very familiar with sweet potato pie. Not the pumpkin pie thing. We got to talk about that too. Okay, that's another thing. But you know what I'm talking about. There's this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna mention. I'll mention this real quick. That pissed me off.
Where your boy
Huffington
Steve Harvey from?
Yeah. Huffington Post had a rather innocuous piece on, I think, the top 20 pies. The top 20 pies, and they mentioned. Okay, they mentioned lemon meringue. Okay, no problem. Apple pie. Blueberry. They mentioned some of the pies you would expect. But then they mentioned other pies I never even heard of, like makeup pies. Sweet potato pie was not on there. Pumpkin pie was on there, not sweet potato pie. So, you know, there's a racial element to that. But a white Southerner is very familiar with sweet potato pie. And they will bring it over to your house. So, and I've seen a lot of interracial couplings in the South. So some of this stuff is breaking down. It's you still have boils that fester in certain sections of the South. And let me tell you something else. The North has their S too. You know, we do a G rated show here, PG show. They have their S too. We've had Northern slavery here. Slavery was abolished, I believe, in the 1830s, 1838, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to check that, 1836, 1838. So we had, you know, roughly 30 years in the North where there was no slavery. But we did have it, and they are uncovering to this day. They are uncovering slavery cemeteries. We have a famed slavery cemetery in New York City, slave burial grounds. We have that. And we have also, they're also finding slave quarters in the North, slave quarters in Jersey, and they're considered historical artifacts. So, you know, we lay a lot of stuff on the South, perhaps rightfully, the Confederate flag, we know about that, but the North has their stuff too. We had a Northern slavery exhibit a couple of years ago that I was fortunate enough to visit, and it's compelling. About what happened in the North. So the North has its history too. You know, we had ports where they shipped the slaves to in New York. So it's there. But I think with this woman, bottom line is, it's not profitable to be a racist. It's not. She lost her gig at the Food Network after 15 years on the air. And also, she lost her status, her stance. You know, it's just not profitable. And people will shun you. Now, the interesting thing, Captain, you know, I'm going to bring it full circle. I'm going to go to the phone.
If we could shame the minstrels like we shame this woman, boy, what could we accomplish? Okay, if we could, for lack of a better analogy, if we could tar and feather some of these lowercase Negroes like T.I. I'm not even laying up for T.I. Not him so much, but he's got some stuff too. But more about Lil Wayne, talking about Emmett Till, the way that he did. Rick Ross.
Waka Flocka.
Oh, Waka Flocka. Let's get rid of these minstrels. So that's what they are. Their diction is poor. I'm going to say it like how I feel. We're tired of the show enough Negro, show enough reincarnation of Step and Fetch in 2013. That's got to go. We have the Real Housewives of Atlanta, Love and Hip Hop, Bad Girls. We have a whole industry of minstrel television programming, and I was looking at some clip on YouTube. I think it was Michael Carroll, who's going to be on pretty soon. He's rougher than us, dare I say. Gary, he's rougher than me, and he said that 30 years ago, 25 years ago, you had The Cosby Show and you had Different World on mainstream television giving a certain view of black life, and now look where we are. We had Flavor of Love and I Love New York. We had a whole minstrel scene. But before that, look what you had. It wasn't always this way. So just as Paula Deen was tarred and feathered and she's being publicly shunned for being a racist, and perhaps rightfully so, we need to have the same fervor, the same verve when it comes towards these minstrels that are also very, very negative toward black imagery. Let's go to another line. I'm going to keep our friend Kim on for a moment. Okay, 484, welcome to Africa Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, this is Q Storm. How you doing?
Pretty good. Good thoughts, Q.
Well, I was prepared to make a point, and I'm a little bit more on shaky ground after hearing that clip that you just played. I mean, that was despicable. But here's my point, and I'm not sure that I'm fully with this, but I just wonder if we think about, you look at Paula Deen, you look at Michael Richards, you look at Don Imus, you look at that guy from ESPN who was talking about I think RG3, is he really down with the cause or whatever?
Right.
They lose their jobs. Now, what is the ultimate end game that we would want as a society? I would think that we would want to eradicate racism as it exists. Now, that's probably not going to happen, but that would be the desired end game. So I wonder, taking a person's livelihood away from them. Now, we know that Paula Deen is not going to be hurting anytime soon, but taking a person's livelihood, taking away their brick and mortar, taking away their job, is that the best way to go about reconciliation? Is telling someone you're fired, disappear, we want you to disappear. How does that help to foster the amelioration of race relations in this country? I'm not sure that that's the best way to approach it.
Well, it's not. It's a knee-jerk reaction. You're just trying to cut ties and do damage control. That's all what that is. It's not.
So then you end up having a person who's a racist, an avowed racist, who is going to be more vitriolic. I don't know how that helps the cause.
Well, you know what? I had similar thoughts about this, too, Q. I'm not going to lie about that. And I'm more, as you know, we try to pick apart these things in a very fair fashion. I thought, after hearing other urban radio outlets, when they tried to pick apart this issue, they had to gloss over the fact that she used the N-word when a gun was put to her temple by a black man. I'm not too comfortable with glossing over that fact. I'm not too comfortable that if anyone put something to my head, I'm not going to refer to them in quaint language. I'm not. I'm pretty sure you could find a black person that would have gone through the same thing and they would have used the same language. So that, it's that I was almost going to give her a pass on that, except then she went into the fact that she wanted to have some kind of slavery motif, where she went to some restaurant years ago and saw black men dressed as old school waiters, and she was likening it to, well, I want some kind of slavery motif, and I'm willing to have black men portrayed this way, you know, and then also this was part of her language. She spoke about to her black workers, now they're workers. Her ancestor were slaves. She thought they were workers 200 years ago. So her whole mindset is screwed up. But you know something, too? You know something, too? You know the deal here is? You have to think about it this way, too. She lost her gig at the Food Network. Okay, she has a restaurant. She's still going to have some money from somewhere. The Food Network doesn't want to be associated with a racist. And you have to understand what that means. The same thing with what happened with Rick Ross and Lil Wayne when they were saying what they were saying. The corporation says, "Hey, we don't want our product to be connected with this BS." And that within itself has to be. It's not really taking away your livelihood in the total scheme of things, but it's really saying that these corporations want to meet a certain standard. I mean, there's certain things you may do in your personal life where you'll say, hey, I don't want any parts of that. So I think that part of it might have to be respected, that part of it.
Well, I'm not saying that she shouldn't be reprimanded, she shouldn't be suspended or whatnot, her show put on hiatus, you know, for her to clear her head, if you know what I mean. But I don't know. I just wonder. And then going back to the whole slave party thing, I mean, it is horrible to hear that. But let me ask you this question. Let me put this to you. And, you know, I haven't called in for a while, but believe me, I've been listening to your show. And I remember, and I don't disagree with what you said. I actually was with you on this. You were talking about how you feel it's necessary to collect and memorialize, you know, slave and racist memorabilia.
That's correct.
Which
yeah.
I didn't have a problem with. So, in some ways, you know, let the woman have her slave themed party, her slave themed dinner, and that will bring that will put to light some of the attitudes in this country.
Well, you know, in her case, though, too, the only problem is that, you know, she came up with this. Listen, there's a dance that these people do. It doesn't even have to be about race. When there's any kind of impropriety that goes down, sexual, racial, whatever, you put out this boilerplate apology. She had this boilerplate apology. Oh, I'm really sorry. And blah, 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 blah. You're sorry you got caught. You know, you can't
That's
go
right.
for this length of time. You can't go for this length of time and really believe, and really have us to believe that you're really. You're really truly sorry. We saw what happened to Mel Gibson. The Jewish folk weren't having it. And, you know, the whole thing of going about and making amends and we understand doing a mea culpa, I mean, I think that's important. But people are beginning to understand on a psychological level, on a very visceral level, we don't believe you. We don't believe you. And that's a problem. And maybe it's a sign of maturity that we don't want to be connected to your BS. You know, that's why I call out the minstrels. I don't want to be connected with that. I don't.
Wait, you know,
and
I saw...
that is how you learn. And that is how you ultimately learn. When you make the ultimate sacrifice like that, then your dumb, fat, buttery behind learns. I'm just saying.
Well, let me just say one last thing, and I'll turn it back over to the panel. I got an interesting post on my Facebook wall someone put on there, and they were saying it was a meme that said had a picture of Tarantino, and it says Tarantino uses the N-word 113 times in his collective films. No one says anything. Then it had a picture of Paula Deen, and it said she uses the N-word in the past, you know, 15 years ago or whatever, and she loses her entire empire. And, you know, it's a little bit of a stretch, but I think the point is well made that, you know, if we're going to go after her for something she did in the past, I don't know, not to say she doesn't feel that way now. Maybe she does use the word now. I don't know. But if we're going to go after her for something she did in the past, we can't continue to give people like Tarantino, even though I like his movies, and we can't give people that represent our own people, like the rappers, the hip-hoppers, we can't give continue to give them a pass.
You know what? The distinction with what you're saying, though, is one is make-believe, one is reality.
But it's written by someone. You're correct, but it's written by someone who has a very influential voice in the film community.
Yeah, well, listen, we've talked forever about Django. I loved Django film, you know, and I thought that if he's going to depict one of Dean's relatives from 1850, he's going to have to use the N-word.
Well, I'm not talking about Django. I'm talking about Pulp Fiction. I'm talking about Jackie Brown. You know, I'm talking about his earlier works. And again, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I'm just saying it is an interesting comparison that's worth examining.
Duly noted. I don't know how to feel about that. I think we give a pass when it comes to cinematic portrayals and context, as opposed to someone working in a restaurant being called the N-word and being called, you're black as a blackboard. I mean, you know, I don't know. But I think there's a distinction somewhere. I think we kind of know the spirit. Let's really be real about it. I think we kind of know the spirit that Tarantino comes from, if you're going to be fair, and the spirit that Dean comes from. That's the difference. The spirit, the context, and it's going to have to end up ultimately with black folks rooting it out themselves because we're causing the confusion. I spoke about this recently to the Oracle. Other folks, other ethnicities that have their own respective negative words are not as confused about it as black folk. We're the only ethnicity that seems to have this level of confusion and discourse over one word. Nigger, nigga. I mean, Jewish folk are not confused about this. They will shut your ass down without hesitation. Black folks are confused, scratch your heads, and now we're paying the price for this.
Well, what I wanted to add, you're saying that Jewish people shut things down. We as black people haven't shut anything down. These are corporations that are looking at their bottom line dollar. You know, if you tell black people don't do something, we don't work as a collective anymore. We'll get on the bandwagon, oh, yeah, she shouldn't use that word, but let some hair product person that makes the weave use the N-word. You think black women gonna stop buying weave? No. So when it comes directly out of our pockets, because, I mean, Paula Deen, we may watch her on TV, but I don't know, you know, how much we support her with our dollar. But if you ask us not to support people with our dollar, like the rappers and Tyler Perry, and we can't do it. Oh, nothing wrong with that, nothing wrong with that. So we'll give a pass if we have to sacrifice, but we'll gladly have a corporation, some outside entity that has nothing to do with us. We'll be glad to let them fire somebody, ESPN, Food Network, but ask us to boycott something or not buy something, and we can't do that. And we're the ones supposedly offended.
We have a term for this. We have a term for that on the show. It's called Caucasian Hair Hat Stockholm Syndrome. Back over to you, Giraffe, on that.
repeat that again.
Caucasian hair hat Stockholm syndrome. There you go.
And the reason, can I just say, D-Bert, the reason.
Yeah, sure.
The reason that our Jewish brothers can shut things down and our Asian brothers can shut things down, so on and so forth, is because you don't have the same schism in those communities that you have in the black community. You never had house Jews and field Jews. You never had house Chinamen and field Chinamen, okay? I mean, with the Jewish community, you may have had the few Jews who were elected to help march those others, unfortunate souls, into the gas chambers. But other than that, you did not have the schism that was calculated in those communities that you have in our communities, and that's the schism that still lives today. That's why you have people like us saying, Rick Ross has no part of our culture. But you have other people chanting those lyrics those rape lyrics. That's an example of the schism right there that is not existing in the other communities. That's the problem.
Well listen,
go ahead.
I was going to say I want to go to a quick groove. Q, you're welcome to hang on. I want to go into this part too. Actually, since we're on this, I want to stay on it. We've got about 14 minutes remaining. I'm thinking of something else to add on this, add to this, I should say, that I think we should, just for the sake of accuracy, what you say is partially correct, but listen, let's be honest. Slightly before the civil rights period and going well into the mid-60s, it wasn't like this. I mean, I might even stretch it to the 80s. There was a point where black folks were very vocal in unison about certain derogatory imagery. There were actors that would not take certain roles. You could do the research and find roles. I mean, like Porgy and Bess. There were roles going back into the 50s where black folks just didn't do it. There's certain things they just did not allow. Even Song of the South. Black folks had a problem with Song of the South. Black folks had a problem with D.W. Griffith's what was the name of that film? God, 1915.
Oh, Birth of a Nation?
The Birth of a Nation. Yeah, ginseng's not quite quick kicking in yet. You heard of black folks that were very vocal about their depictions. It's only because within recent years where you really have a solid minstrel industry. I mean, minstrelsy dates back to the 1830s, and as we know the history. And even that's psychological. It's a psychological study because you had white folks that would make fun of black idioms and exaggerate them, exaggerate the features, clown black people. Then at some point, black people started doing that. Burt Williams and such. So I mean that is crazy that the minstrel industry has been around so long, and now we have neo minstrelsy, where black folks poke fun of this wide-eyed, teeth-showing, poor diction, ignorant portrayal, and there's millions of dollars at stake, and they have no problems clowning for the public. So, I mean, this exists where it didn't always, you know, it didn't exist to the point, we've had points where we were about it, then we straightened up, now we're back to laying down again. The historical record shows this. I don't know where we are right now. We're in a neo minstrel mode, I think. Let's go to a quick groove, more on this topic on Paula Deen and the nonsense. This is Danielia Cotton giving you some Afropunk, make you move. We'll be right back, folks. Hold on.
right, folks, once again, this is the Grindhouse, the Afro Radio section, Afro Radio segment, I should say. Danilia Cotton, make you move. Folks, listen, I'm trying. I'm not playing Lil Wayne. I'm not playing Drake, who, by coincidence, is the great Larry Graham's nephew. But he doesn't mention that. Isn't that crazy? Perhaps one of the best bassists in history is your uncle. But you want to do the coon dance. I don't know. I can't figure it out, ladies and gentlemen. The call-in number is 646-915-960. We have some friends stopping by, of course. We have Kim, and we also have Q-Storm. I think we have another person waiting in abeyance. Let's open up the lines once again. We got about 7 minutes remaining. Let's get to it. 703, is this George? 703?
I know we cover a lot of ground with this, but at the end of the day, we got to realize that Paula Deen's from Albany, Georgia. And if you do your research, Martin Luther King, back when he was doing the Civil Rights Movement, said he couldn't save Albany, Georgia. They had some of the most virulent races ever. Now, I can't link her from where she was born, but we are creatures of our environment, more or less. So take that with a grain of salt. Is this overreaction? Probably. We got more pressing needs in our community than worrying about a millionaire TV chef and, you know what she said 15 or 20 years ago. But at the end of the day, why do we have to go over this? No other race has to go over this. You don't hear anybody talking about Jews because, you know, if that comes up once, they're destroyed. But every week there's some celebrity that's coming out with the N-word and, you know, some form of fashion, and we as a community go through this song and dance. I mean, we have to collectively just let celebrities and people know that it's something you can't get away with. This is 2013. It's not 1961. So that's all I have to say with that.
Well, you know what? You're saying something very important, and I agree with you. And I think on occasion I do think to myself that, you know, folks are concerned about drones. But really, the black race has been taken down by the lexicon. We've been, you know, we have books. There's a book entitled Nigger. There's a book entitled, well, several books actually, but one book specifically, I forgot his name, Ronald, why can't I think of his name? He's a noted professor. I think he's also a legal scholar. Anyway, this gentleman wrote about the history of the word. And it's a rather lengthy treatise on the word. I mean, to be able to write a book on one word is incredible.
That, you know what's really sad? I have Sirius XM Radio, and, you know, they have hip-hop stations. And the hosts of the various shows say the N-word all throughout their show.
Yeah.
And then people, very racist, come in, you know, various races are calling each other that. I'm not, you know, some people say, oh, you know, it desensitizes the word. No, it doesn't. Because no other race, you know, you don't hear any other race has a derogatory word like that in the American lexicon that everybody's using.
Well,
but,
every ethnicity has something, but there's no confusion as to how they feel about it. It's legendary as to our confusion. And the fact that even last week or two shows ago, I talked about the Wendy Williams and the, what's her name? The comedian.
Lisa Lampanelli.
Yes, Lisa Lampanelli. Oh, Jesus. Got to get some more ginseng. Lisa Lampanelli, that whole thing, I was siding on Lisa Lampanelli's side to a certain degree because we've lost the battle. She's calling another white person the N-word. I mean, in some respects, if you're going to accept this, you're going to want white people to call each other that. They're not calling you that, at least not this time. I mean, it's just too much. It's too much discussion, too much work about this thing. I don't think that the Asian and Indian folk that are winning spelling bees and are getting full scholarships to medical schools are concerned about this stuff. No, I'm tired of hearing black men forsaking college scholarships so they can become rappers. Maybe he is an N-word for that. That's the problem. It's full circle. You have top flight rappers that have songs called Niggas in Paris, friends with Gwen Stefani. Well, I'm definitely out of it now. Whatever.
The actress.
Paltrow, right. Oh, jeez. Nas comes in and says, well, she's one of our home people. We're going to give her a pass. I mean,
well, I think one of the issues.
It's a mess.
I think we're the only people that let the lower tier have
run the
microphone
show.
No other race has that, you know. Gentlemen, great show. Take care.
Thank you, man. Thank you, as always. We have about 2 minutes, so less than a minute and a half now, Captain. These shows go so quickly. Didn't even get to the stuff that I wanted. Other stuff I wanted to talk about. We'll address it on Wednesday, obviously, folks. But listen, the key component, I think, too, is that we have to do what we're doing. Keep the positive force that I think this show imbues. Do what you're doing. I like how Kim speaks. Of course, the captain. We have to create our own army, so to speak, and to develop plans and develop our own space. Because for whatever reason, the minstrels have a space, and it's quite profitable. I'm tired of it, but there's got to be a balance. We don't have any balance. That's the key component to all this nonsense. No balance. Captain, your thoughts as we close on out.
Well, that's to say, we'll do it again this Wednesday at 7 p.m. Tune in for more great highlights. That's all I have to
say. Sounds good. Tim, Q, check back with us, as always. Going on out with Gorillaz Stylo. See you all next week. It's been a pleasure.
Love electricity, shockwave central, power on the motherboard, yes. Push up, overload, legendary, heavy glow, sunshine on the road, keep this on. Yes, the lantern burn, burn, man, easy, and broadcast so raw and neatly. Thunder roll, sunshine, work it out.
Vibe so right, I tell you I gotta get it. Grew so tall, though I used to be a midget. And we go, got deep, low, booking agents, so we never do a bleep show. Color fear not, confidence can make fear drop. In the game, on a plane, till our ears pop. I look at life like, what's the purpose of it all? Stick with us and you'll never see your budget fall. Stay true, they can't corrupt us all. We fresh in LAX, and still my mother calls. In Cali, I'm a big man, Paul Gasol. Mathematically speaking, I think it's problem solved. I wish I had time to address challenges, but it's not enough space on my calendars. Head to tail, I'm living very monetary, living very visionary, searching for the meaning like a dictionary.
Oh, Stylo, go for blossom in your soul. When you know your heart is light, electric is the love. When the maids go fly, up from the bottom in your eyes, then I know the twilight night, not so broken
hearted. Right now,
a vengeance. I keep it moving, I'm just gearing up my engine. You don't know Chitty, and you don't gotta mention I'm inching. Prime Minister shit, Winston. But I'm still a dog, bring the kennel in. We could serve anybody that wanted, we Wimbledon. 2010, the name's scribbling. Rap playing ball, I'm spitting it and I'm dribbling. Ain't lost focus for a minute, here's Ritalin. Thinking about this and I'm thinking about that. Like how my life would be if I never wrote a rap. Would I load a gap? Wanna say something and probably hold it back? Yeah, it's what I owe to rap. Cause before, my future was Coca-Cola black. And doing what you love makes your heart race. And whenever we do it, we doing it at our pace.
Oh, Stylo,
that's it.
Go for blossom,
I like that.
In your soul. When you know your heart is light, electric is the love. When the mix your down.